Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
She was taken 2 months after her birth by her mom, and we've been searching. I've been going to court for just years and years, and I had got legal custody of her and everything. From there, I've been trying to find Jillian after I got legal custody and actually had some kind of legalities on my side to where Jillian was actually in trouble. You know, there was actually, she's got the warrant and things like that, and supposed to be moving forward. Just been having a really rough time with that portion. We're not able to locate her anywhere. Just haven't been able to for years and years. I've got State Highway Patrol investigator now working on the case as well, and she's had it for well over a year and a half, and she's been trying to do her several little kind of things that she's been trying to get done, but nothing's been really successful. So she was trying to bring on the FBI and the U.S. Marshals on board. When every time I talk to her, it comes down to there's another homicide or there's another drug case, you know, something that pushes it back and puts it on the back burner again.
On October 1st, 2013, Jillian Pagano abducted her three-month-old daughter, Liliana, from Rocheport, Missouri. Liliana's father, Tyler, and Jillian had a falling out shortly after young Liliana was born. One day, Tyler received a text message stating that Jillian and Liliana were going out of state. When he inquired further as to where they were going and for how long, he received no answer. Since that day, more than 5 years ago, Tyler has not seen or heard from the mother of his child or his daughter. He believes that her family knows exactly where they are, and they simply refuse to tell him because they don't want him involved in Liliana's life. Tyler has spent many years trying to find his daughter and let her know how much he loves her, but his efforts to find them have yet to be successful. Where are Jillian and Liliana Pagano, and will Tyler ever be reunited with his beloved daughter? I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 180 of The Vanished, Liliana Pagano's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. When I was first contacted about covering Liliana's case, I did a quick search online and was surprised that I couldn't find much information about her disappearance. A missing child with hardly any coverage? What I did find was this video that the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children had made with Liliana's father, Tyler, and it really tugged at my heart.
Liliana Grace, though 5 years has passed since you were last in my arms, my love for you has not diminished even in the smallest amount. I remember your cute little dimple chin, your big beautiful eyes, and the way you kept scrunching your face like you had just tasted lemon for the first time. It's all too real and feels like it was just yesterday. I want you to know that I will never change for me, even if I spend the rest of my life searching for you. There is and never will be anything on this earth I could ever love more than you. I see you in every little girl playing with her daddy on the television shows or movies. I see you in every story of a parent being reunited with their child. And I imagine the day we are reunited. Just the thought brings a smile to my face. I imagine the breakthrough moment when you realize that I'm your father. As I know right now, all I am to you is a stranger. I'm so sorry this is our sad reality, but I want you to know that when you are found, it will be my primary mission to show you that your father has always loved you and wanted to be there for you. You now have an entire family waiting to take you in and love you. We will love you just as much as I loved you when I first held you when you entered this world. You deserve a normal life knowing both of your parents love you equally. I won't rest until you have that Liliana Grace. I love you. Your father, Tyler.
Liliana Pagano was born on July 18, 2013. Leading up to her birth, her maternal grandparents were going through a divorce. When Liliana's mother, Jillian, went into labor, her mother, Valerie, was already at the hospital. But Jillian's father wasn't there. For this story, we were able to speak with Liliana's father, Tyler, about the events of that day that caused a rift between the new family.
We were really close up until in the hospital. We had a falling out, I guess. There was only one person who was allowed to kind of stay in the room during the epidural process for Jillian and while we were having Liliana. And so I was kicked out of the room for that. I kind of made just, you know, childish decision. The grandmother and the grandfather were going through a divorce, and I knew that the grandmother hadn't planned to tell, you know, grandfather John that Liliana was coming, you know, that she was on the way. And so I'd give John the heads up that Liliana was coming and, you know, that he needed to get to the hospital. And then after that was when we just had, there was no relationship at all. I mean, once she found out I had done that, she had just cut me off. She was very, very frustrated at that situation and that I called her father. I didn't even really know it was so much against her will. I thought it was more against Valerie's. But then, like I say, it comes out that she didn't really want her father there. And I had let him know. And so, like I say, after that point, our relationship was just, she wouldn't speak to me. That's kind of where we had our falling out and where wouldn't speak to me and was creating the problems with me trying to see Liliana. I had just been asking her basically for several weeks after she had got out of the hospital to have a visit with her. And I did get to have one visit with her before she was taken out there at their home. But that was it.
While speaking with Tyler, we asked him if there was anything that stood out to him on the day that Liliana and Jillian disappeared.
The day she was taken, I just got a text message. Jillian hadn't spoken to me in a couple weeks, just wouldn't respond to text messages, calls, anything. And I got a text message just stating that Jillian was taking Liliana out of the city. And that's all she said, because this situation was becoming too stressful for her. It is what she told me on the text message. And, you know, I just put, you know, okay, can you at least tell me where, you know, where she's going to be going and things like that. And after that, I just didn't have a response. So like I say, it's still very mysterious and very, I mean, the day, like I said, happened is very, very uneventful. It's just that one drop text message, and that's all I heard from her, and then that was it.
Tyler told us that the way this all transpired was a complete shock to him.
I didn't expect that. I mean, that, like I say, it was with it being uneventful, at the same time, it was very eventful. I mean, it kind of shook me, but it was just that one message. But yeah, no, I didn't see it going to that. Quite to that extreme. I thought that we would be able to fix things and things would work out and that we'd be able to be adults, but I just wasn't getting the communication from her. Yeah, like I say, it really was a shock, you know.
After trying to see his daughter multiple times, Tyler was forced to get the courts involved. However, this would be a back-and-forth situation that lasted several years. Years in which he would not even see a picture of his daughter.
She was just right out the bat claimed that she wasn't served, saying that she wasn't legally served and that Boone County didn't have jurisdiction over the case. So we did that back and forth. I mean, like I said, I went back to court years and years. But yeah, it's been to court several times. And up until the last about two times, they were getting away with what they're basically with what they were trying to do. They were just saying that we weren't personally served. All right, that's just you were. We're going to reset this date. They come back and say the exact same thing at the next date. The judge said, okay, well, you were. We'll set another date. And I'd say they really were able to drag that out and create, you know, this big window of time, because like I said, they dragged that out over a period of a couple of years, sending me back to court and it doing that same rigmarole, saying they didn't get, you know, the personal service. The judge saying, yep, we're going to go again. You did. And I've heard your argument, but I don't know why exactly, you know, they couldn't do anything to her, you know, they couldn't force out any issues or anything like that, because that, even at that point, they weren't issuing a warrant or anything. It wasn't until I got to the point where I didn't know what to do. I was just so, like, lost. My lawyer had even told me, basically, said, you, outside of things we've done, he said, man, there's nothing else that I can do. So he told me, basically, essentially, he said, it is where it is. I can't help you anymore. And we've been searching. I had got legal custody of her and everything. From there, I've been trying to find Jillian after I got legal custody and actually had some kind of legalities on my side to where Jillian was actually in trouble. You know, there was actually, she's got the warrant and things like that and supposed to be moving forward. And just been having a really rough time with that portion. We're not able to locate her.
For this story, we also had the opportunity to speak with Tyler's attorney, Chris Braddock, to try to get a better understanding of all the legal proceedings that transpired.
My name is Christopher Braddock. I am an attorney at Klein, Braddock & Basinger, LLC, and it's a general practice law firm, so we handle a wide variety of cases, including family law, criminal defense, personal injury, etc. Tyler contacted me and asked me to help out with his case. He had filed suit for paternity and custody to get an order of paternity establishing him as the father of the child in that case, and then also to get a custody order from the court, which would provide, you know, what time mom has the child and what time dad has the child and how they do exchanges and all of that. Eventually, that was entered by the court, I believe in 2016. Yeah, the judgment was entered November 22nd, 2016. So it took quite a while between when it was filed, which was 2013, and when it was entered. You know, on average, these cases take about a year, but this one had some extra hurdles involving service of summons and process and those types of issues. And so it was really drawn out quite a bit.
3 years of court proceedings seems like a very long time, but it appears per Tyler and his attorney that Jillian's family kept denying summons and causing as many delays in the case as they could.
That's what I've told other people I've talked to, or I think I talked to a couple other reporters, that the issue is if there was something that the mom is alleging should prevent Tyler from seeing the kid, there are many legal recourses to bring that to the court's attention. But there was no allegation of abuse against him. There was no allegation of really anything against him that would prohibit any type of contact. It's really just mom never showed up to court and tried to hide from court and continues to seem to try and hide from court, but never raised any issues as to Tyler's fitness to be a parent. And that's what the courts are there for, is that if you know, do have an issue like that, you can present it to the court and have them enter a ruling, but that's not the track that she chose to take.
We asked Mr. Braddock if he could provide any information as to what law enforcement knows when it comes to Jillian and Liliana's whereabouts.
So I don't know what law enforcement currently believes. I know while the case was pending, there were times that her vehicle, I believe, was cited in mid-Missouri, but there were also records and testimony that she made that had been in Florida or in the Northeast United States. And I think the service attempts were made in those jurisdictions as well. My recollection is that family members there would get the service processors would show up and the family members would say, well, she's not here. But whether or not that's true, I don't know. Yes, there's been a variety of places she may have been, and I'm not sure what the current law enforcement theory is on it. And again, I've not worked on this case in about 3 years. It was about the last time I was really involved. I would guess that she's not in mid-Missouri because it'd be hard to hide that long, you know, right nearby where this is pending without getting caught. So I would guess she's somewhere else if I was guessing. As far as the parents harboring, I mean, that's how this case was too, where the mom would come in and the brothers and they'd, you know, be asked under oath questions, you know, such as, when was the last time you spoke to her on the phone? You know, when's the last time you said, so, you know, we don't have her phone number. We don't call her. We don't know where she lives. We haven't seen her in years. It's just stuff that wasn't very credible. And I think the judge didn't believe it was credible either. So it's just not very common for a family to have literally zero contact with, you know, a granddaughter or, you know, a young baby granddaughter or a child without having some explanation of a falling out or some reason for that. So.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. According to Mr. Braddock, there are some signs that Liliana had received some government services. But within the last few years, there's been no such activity.
Well, in my recollection, I believe the child received some type of state services very, very early on before the case really got going. And I can't recall if it was Jillian or if it was Lillian, the child. But I remember during some of the various searches to try and locate them, there were records of some different services provided, government services to an address in Missouri, but then those were cut off when she disappeared and they weren't refiled in whatever place she went to, because that was one avenue we tried to use to find out where she was, you know, was she receiving Social Security or TANF or anything like that? And again, we didn't find anything after a few, you know, after the case was filed.
Finally, we asked Mr. Braddock what his opinion of the whole situation was, given the fact that Jillian had many chances to handle this predicament much differently.
If the mother of the child had some fear for her own safety or the child's safety, or there was some issue that she thought prevented the father from being a candidate to have contact with the child or to have unsupervised visits or any of those things, those are all issues that get addressed in courts all the time. Something that could have been filed as a pleading, it's something that could have been tried in the case. I mean, we have courts for that very reason, to keep kids safe, make sure that they don't have contact with people they shouldn't have contact with. But instead of raising any such issue, no issues like that were brought up by counsel for mom. she just disappeared and basically chose not to deal with it. And they alleged that the service of summons was invalid and that the court case is invalid. And I guess one final point is they also never appealed the judgment. There's a judgment entered and they had 1 year to appeal it. And so if the service was invalid or if there was some defect in the legality of the judgment, they should have appealed it. But it's a final judgment now. I mean, it can't be appealed at this point. So I'm not sure what the reasoning was or the strategy was for that. But again, that's why it's so confusing as to what this motive would have been when there are so many avenues or opportunities to address any concerns through the court properly.
After going back and forth with the courts and receiving little to no help in regards to finding Liliana, Tyler took his case to the governor of Missouri.
So I reached out to the governor and wrote the governor because I had actually spoken with the State Highway Patrol about this case before, about a year before they had actually started to help me. So none of the police forces, the Boone County and then the State Highway Patrol, nobody was in Boone County police, and then just the Boone County Sheriff, so I tried as well. None of those, those agencies were willing to help me or to even look. So I wrote the governor, and the governor finally got the case to the State Highway Patrol investigator, who I've had her for about the last year and a half now, Barb Littrell, out of Macon. So she's been kind of working on the case, trying to get a presentation together to get to the FBI and to the U.S. Marshals to get them on board to help us right now. And like I say, now it just gets pushed back by, there was another homicide or there was another drug case that she had to investigate, and they're shorthanded and whatever the case may be.
For this story, we were also able to briefly speak with Trooper Barbara Littrell.
My name is Trooper Barbara Littrell. I'm a criminal investigator with the Missouri State Highway Patrol, and I work mainly in northeastern Missouri. I was kind of unique when I was younger. I always knew I wanted to go into law enforcement. That's all I remember wanting to do. So I had went to college and got my Bachelor of Science in Criminal Justice and came to Missouri in 2010, where I had applied for the patrol and was accepted. I knew my long-term goal was to do investigations. I did about 5 years on the road, and it's been almost 5 years in the criminal investigation unit, and I love it.
She told us more about Liliana's case.
Liliana's biological father, Tyler, contacted our agency in late 2016. I know Tyler had approached a couple other agencies in which they had deemed the case to be civil. You know, as time goes on, you're able to go from civil to, you start getting the criminal element involved in there. And that was about where I stepped in and was able to determine that. You know, it's been an ongoing investigation since then, and we still haven't found her. And Amber Alert, I actually did the original missing persons report. And as far as an Amber Alert, I don't believe Liliana is in danger, of injury or death or anything like that. I think, as far as I can tell and from the interviews that I've conducted, that there's no reason to believe that she is in any danger. I do not consider Jillian missing. I consider her an absconded fugitive. And anybody that has talked to me, from her side of the family has indicated that Tyler seemed like, nobody really had anything negative to say about Tyler. So I don't know. But it's crazy to go on for this long and like I said, be absolutely just off the grid.
Trooper Littrell said that she's limited in what she can tell us, but we asked if she had any theories as to where Jillian and Liliana could be.
Well, this is still an ongoing investigation, and in order to protect the integrity of that, I'm not really at will to talk about the details of the case or the investigative tactics that we've used. I can tell you that the investigation has involved multiple law enforcement agencies inside and outside of Missouri. Jillian and Liliana could be anywhere, not just in Missouri, but The Pagano family has contacts in multiple areas of the United States, including New York, Florida, and South Carolina. What we had already talked about, Liliana's mother, Jillian, does have a felony warrant for her arrest for child kidnapping.
One of the tough things about this case is that we don't know exactly what Liliana looks like today, because she's been missing since she was an infant. Trooper Littrell was able to work with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children to have an age progression photo of Liliana created.
I had contacted NCMEC. They did a poster, a missing child poster, as well as an age progression photo. We were able to provide NCMEC with the things that they needed to come up with to do that age progression photo. And the missing person poster now does include that age progression photo. Of course, you know, there's no telling. We don't have any photos of Liliana since she was about maybe 2 or 3 months old. So, you know, of course, it's not 100% accurate. NCMEC is a national agency, so her poster is out there, and anybody can see that on their website.
Finally, we asked what someone should do if they believe they've spotted Jillian or Liliana.
One of three things, really. The Missouri State Highway Patrol would like to encourage anyone with information that could assist with locating Liliana to contact the patrol, their local law enforcement agency, or NCMEC, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, at any number. I mean, they can call 911. They can contact the Missouri State Highway Patrol at 660-385-2132 or NCMEC at 1-800-THE-LOST, which is 1-800-843-5678.
At the time Liliana went missing, Tyler had been working to obtain a paternity test to prove that he was truly Liliana's father, so that Jillian couldn't claim otherwise. At the time of her birth, there was no father listed on Liliana's birth certificate.
At that point, I was working on getting the paternity, and I tried to get the police involved, yes, but as I was not on listed on Liliana's birth certificate as the father, at that point, they told me they really didn't entertain the idea. You know, they just figured me right out the door pretty quickly. You know, it's basically they said I don't have the legal right to open a case against, you know, her or anything because I'm not technically the father. But I am. I've went to court and I've got interlocutory judgments put into place and I am now on her birth certificate as her father. That's why we've been able to move forward with getting the warrant.
We asked Tyler if he's had any contact with Jillian's mother, Valerie, since the pair had disappeared.
Her mom is kind of the puppet master of all this. Her mom claims that she doesn't have any contact, doesn't know where Jillian is, but she was also directly misled our case. She went to court and testified that Jillian was in Florida and that she had moved her down there personally. And then once we got to Florida to kind of check on everything, it turns out the grandmother that Valerie had said Jillian was staying with, and that's my baby's mom. They said that, you know, she had come to visit for just a visit, but she had never lived there. And so basically she knows where she is, or we believe she knows where she is and does have contact with her. Yes, but she claims she does not. Valerie had kind of misled us, led the investigation, sent us down to Florida to send the personal service down there to Florida to try and serve Jillian and everything. And then turns out she wasn't actually there. What our best guess of what we think she might be is East Coast, because her brother lives up that way near, I'm not exactly sure. Her brother, John Jr., lives up that way in New York, kind of New Hampshire kind of area. I'm not sure, though, which state it is over that way. That's kind of where we're thinking she is, because I've also talked with a narcotics officer who got brought onto the case to try and investigate and help, because, you know, they can do a little things a little more incognito. And he had actually heard from somebody who works with Valerie. Valerie had said that she's going out to East Coast for the holidays, for Christmas. That's why we think East Coast, and as well as the brother there out there.
Since Trooper Barbara Littrell has come on the case, not much has moved forward in regards to finding Liliana and Jillian. We asked Tyler if he could shed some light on some of the things that have been done to help locate the mother and daughter.
essentially nothing. I mean, other than Barb, what she had done initially is she had just run another skip trace to see if she had found any information. Other than that, there's really nothing that she had done up until getting the FBI on board and getting them running. I mean, she had said she was doing a lot of things, you know, a lot of several things in the background, but nothing ever really seemed to pan out. I mean, she said she was going to try to get some subpoenas to check Valerie's records, Valerie's phone records. And she said for some reason she couldn't get a hold of the prosecutor in Boone County to get that done. I guess she reached out several times and the prosecuting attorney wouldn't reach back out to her. And so she couldn't get that filed, couldn't get anything done out of that. That's basically, as far as I know, the only actionable thing that she's, you know, actually done.
Despite all the setbacks and lack of movement, Tyler is still doing his best to find his daughter. He doesn't want her to grow up thinking that it was his choice not to be part of her life.
She turned 6 in July. Liliana's had to have wondered something now, and they may have been able to avoid it up till this point. But, you know, that's all I can imagine. And just being said is that I didn't want to be around, or, you know, that I left, that I don't care for her. And that's the biggest thing. You know, that's what I don't want to have happen. And that's the reason why, you know, why I'm talking with you, why I'm pushing to have all this happen, to get Liliana back and everything, because I never had a father myself. And I don't know why I didn't, but that's something that I have to always think about. My mom didn't really know who my father was, because she was just quite free with herself. I mean, honestly, is the best way to put it. And so she didn't know who my father was. And kind of the same thing for me. I always wonder, even at, you know, 29, I'm down here, 29 years later, if that man had to know something, because, you know, you've got to have an idea that you've got a child, you know, when that happens, you've had to have an idea that, you might've made a mistake, you know, that the protection might've malfunctioned. And that's the thing that, you know, that always sticks in the back of my mind, is like the man, maybe he didn't know 100% for sure, but he had to have known. And so that's the kind of thing what I'm trying to avoid having her to have to fight in the future, is to ever wonder why. Because I absolutely, even today, still, she's my world. I mean, nothing's really right with me. You know, I move on the best I can, but life's rough. It's just very, very rough. And I don't want her to ever think that anything would be different, you know, that she's not my entire world, because I know how painful that can be. I'm not trying to be a, you know, a big baby. My situation's a little bit different. But still, even I think about it and would like to know why my father wasn't more involved. It just sticks in the back of your mind, for kind of just lingers.
Tyler told us that he has never had a feeling of opportunity in this case, in the sense that they are going in the right direction or that they're close to finding Liliana and Jillian.
I've not ever had that feeling or opportunity, no. I mean, we've been just searching. It's all, nobody's seen hide nor hair ever, doesn't have a direction, general direction of even where she is. Scary in itself. You know, I don't know how health-wise, I don't know how she's being taken care of. That's one of the things we've looked at, you know, is checking skip traces again to see where she might have had medical care. We're not seeing her on medical plans, insurance plans, things like that. So that's another thing that's kind of really causing this to be urgent. The level of care they're providing for her right now cannot be what she needs.
With the thought of his daughter not having any documented medical care, we asked Tyler if he believes that Liliana is in any sort of danger.
I don't think that she would hurt her intentionally, no. That's the one fear that I do not have. But at the same time, whether it's intentional or not, if there's harm, to me, it's still harm. Those are my fears. I don't worry about her physical. I don't think that she's being physically abused in that manner, but I believe in that secondary manner, in the lifestyle, the things that they have to do to keep up this lifestyle, and how unhealthy that is for her, not just, you know, even if it's, you know, hygiene wise, but mentally, developmentally, she's got to be locked away, you know, away from people, away from children, away from, it's just going to be hard for her to develop and to have, you know, the correct social interactions when she's been locked away like this.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. While working on this case, we contacted Dr. Jeffrey Greif. He's a professor who has been studying parental abductions for many years. He told us how he got into this line of work.
My name is Dr. Jeffrey Greif. I am a professor at the University of Maryland School of Social Work, and I do research on a number of areas, including child abduction and family relationships. I was doing research on divorce a number of years ago and realized at the extreme end of divorce are parents that are so unable to agree about anything, including childcare, that one of them may even take a child and go on the run and prevent the other parent from having contact with that child. Yeah, so I came into it from the divorce point of view, and then I run into all these other folks that were more focused on the child and were coming into it from a child trauma perspective. So I sort of took a broader family perspective and tried to understand also what both the searching parent, the abducting parent were doing. About 10 years ago, I did a report for the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children on that, where I interviewed adults who were kidnapped as children. I don't interview any child because you don't fly in a researcher to, you know, another state and talk to a kid for an hour and then leave. You do get permission from somebody once they reach the age of 21 that they're willing to be interviewed as an adult. And they talk about things that happen while they're missing, but also about what should we do about recovery, what happens when a child comes home.
One thing that we've seen in parental abduction cases is how they are viewed differently when a mom takes a child compared to a father taking a child.
There's also the social construction of kidnapping, in that some policemen that I've talked to, FBI people that I've talked to, think if or thought 20 years ago, if a child is with a mother, it's not really kidnapping because a child should be with his or her mother, whereas it raised their hackles much more if it was the father who had taken the child and was preventing a mother from being with her child. One of the misconceptions is that if the child is with the mother, the child is fine. The child is in good hands. Secondly, the misconception could be if the child is well taken care of when the child is in hiding, that everything will be okay. We can look at the two extremes of what could happen. I could abduct my child and move to a wonderful little village in Canada with a loving, I'll say woman, but it could be a loving man, and we raise our child together, and it's a great community, and there's no real harm in that. And I have taken my child from my ex-wife who was married to an abusive man. And I've gone to the Department of Social Services and they refuse to act. And so I've been compelled to take my child to save her or him from being abused by him. There's that sort of scenario that you're saving your child, and it's a real threat that if you don't do something, some real harm is going to come to the child because your ex-partner has married somebody who's an abuser. So that's one sort of view. The other one is that I take my kid and I'm moving from truck stop to truck stop, and the kid never goes to school, and we're out in the mountains or some little place, and there's a lot of arrested psychological development, maybe physical development, and the child never learns to trust anybody in society. Maybe I've used a babysitter. So I go to my construction job or whatever I'm doing. I'm working in a coffee shop to make ends meet, and that babysitter does harm to the child. So there are a range of sort of scenarios here that we could talk about. But those are sort of some of the things that can happen on the extreme ends. A lot of it is about how long is the child in hiding? What really constitutes an abduction? Is it 24 hours or more? Against a custody decree. I pretty much have studied people that have been gone for 18 months or longer. That's sort of been the focus of some of the work that I've done. So those are some of the things floating out there.
We asked Dr. Greif about the amount of trauma that can be expected in a case like Liliana's, since she was taken when she was so young.
The amount of trauma, depending upon what happens to her throughout the rest of her life, could be anywhere from zero up to 100. If she never knew that she had a father, or if there was a total construction of a story, the child might not ever experience any trauma because the child wouldn't know that the child had been missing or had been deprived contact with the father. If the child, though, finds out at the age of 8, 10, 12, 16, 18, or 28, what happened is going to cause the whole narrative around which the child had established a relationship with her mother and whoever else her mother has partnered with, if her mother has partnered with anybody else, to question every basis of trust that she's ever formed with her mother. And it's difficult to know what the fallout for that would be, or how the mother could shape that narrative, saying, yes, you're right, you found out that you were kidnapped, but I did it out of your own safety, out of love for you. It just depends upon, you know, there's so many hypotheticals floating around with these cases. You don't know what the kidnapper is saying. You don't know why the kidnapper has acted, and you don't know when and at what age, and for how long, rather, the child is missing, if the child ever finds out that the child has been kidnapped. There's huge variation in resilience. You have children raised in the lap of luxury, in quotes, with two parents who are loving and supportive, and they have a series of problems, mental health issues. Then you see kids raised in war zones who grow up with one parent or no parents and come out doing pretty well in life. So there's that whole range of resilience that you put your finger on. What happens is that when somebody finds out they've been kidnapped, if they haven't been told they were kidnapped, it causes them, depending upon the situation, as all this stuff does, causes them to not trust their own instincts, to not trust their parent that it's kidnapped them. They may wonder, why didn't Dad, in this case, try harder to find me? Did he not love me? So you can work this both ends. If you're a child, you can be angry at your kidnapping parent, but also angry at the other parent for not trying harder to find me.
Dr. Greif also told us about the trauma that affects the parent that's left behind searching for their missing child.
I do clinical work. If my client is the left behind parent, or I can speak for myself, if my child was kidnapped, I'd spend 24 hours a day looking for the child, right? I do that for what? For a week? I do that for a month? But what if I have another child at home? What if I have a partner? What if I have a job? And they're all saying, look, Jeff, you haven't been available to us. You have to get on with your life. You have to go back to your job, or else you're going to lose the job. And then what shape are you going to be in when you find your child? So at what point, and there's no answer to it, at what point do you begin to return to your life but not feel you're being disloyal to your abducted kid? It's a horrible position to be in. Can you go out and have fun? Are you allowed to go to a movie, or should you be checking with a police station in Fargo just to see if the child showed up there by chance? And also, how stupid was I to have married this person in the first place, or have had a child with this person in the first place? It's all my fault.
I had this episode completed and scheduled for release when something huge happened. I was on a trip to Los Angeles for the show, and I was sitting in the airport waiting for my flight back to Philadelphia when I got a message that I wasn't expecting. After being missing for more than 5 years, Liliana and Jillian Pagano had been found in North Carolina. The U.S. Marshals recently became involved in the case. They followed some leads to North Carolina, and while doing some surveillance, they saw Jillian and Liliana exit a residence. This is when they arrested Jillian, who had a warrant for felony child abduction. And Liliana has been reunited with her father. Jillian had changed Liliana's name to Nadia, and was also homeschooling her to help keep her hidden. Valerie Pagano and Juliana Pagano have also been charged in relation to the case. They both have one felony count of hindering prosecution. This is the best outcome we could ever imagine. But I'm sure there's a long road ahead for Liliana and Tyler, since she was taken when she was an infant. A long road of healing, since she has to build a completely new relationship with her father. And she doesn't have her mother, who she had been with for all of those years. This does give us hope in some other cases that I've covered, like Kayla Unbahan, who has been missing for almost 2 years, and Christopher and Lisa Mae Zaharias, who have been missing for more than 31 years. Sometimes they do come home.
I mean, the only thing that I tell myself every day is don't focus on the fact that you know that she's not here. Focus on the things that you can do to bring her back. But, I mean, that's the only way that I've been able to survive is I've had to, for years, you know, that's all I thought about is she's not here, she's not here, she's not here. And it tore me apart and, you know, held me back from just emotionally kind of moving forward and trying to do something actually positive with the case. But that's it. I mean, just keep focusing on good, you know, the things that you can do. Just keep looking for opportunities, because that's the only thing that I've been able to do is just what opportunity, what else can I try, what else can I think of, and just do it. I mean, just try everything and just keep trying, and, you know, don't ever stop.
That brings us to the end of episode 180. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to contact me, there's a page and a discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter @thevanishedpod and also on Instagram.
you enjoy the show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey. Join me next time. I'll be covering a case from North Carolina. Thanks for listening.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.